segment of the program, we're going to be doing some talking about estate planning, actually focusing on something called POLSTS, P-O-L-S-T, and then small s, Physician's Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment, which is a system that identifies patients' wishes and directives regarding medical treatment. So if you've never heard about this before, which I think most of us have not in the past, we're going to try to get you going on this. My guests I have two guests, estate planning attorney Jana Ellerman, a member of the Executive Committee of the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar of California. She's a partner in the Cameron Park, California law firm of Guthrie and Ellerman. My other guest is Dr. Lael Conway Duncan, Medical Director of Consulting Services of the Coalition for Compassionate Care of California. The office is in Sacramento. And I want to give you, and I'll give it to you again, the website with a lot of good information for you with regard to the coalition. It's coalition, spell it out, C-O-A-L-I-T-I-O-N, CCC.org. And hopefully that might be of helpful to you. It's the Coalition for Compassionate Care of California. That's where the CCC comes from. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar. Additional funding for the program is also made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Jana, are you there? Uh-oh. Jana's not there. Where is Jana? Okay, try to find Jana if you can. Lael, well, we're trying to find Jana, and I don't know what happened to her. We put her on hold, and she should be there. So, Debbie, you try to find her for us. Lael, would you do this? Let's start with, what is a POLST? Because I think most people may never have heard of what it is. What is it?
So as you pointed out in your opening, Chuck, the POLST form is the Physician's Order for Life-Sustaining Treatments. It's a medical form that was specifically designed to ensure that people's wishes regarding their care during any serious illness, life-threatening illness, or towards the end of life, that those wishes are honored to the best of our ability within the medical system. And that's what the form is designed for. It is highly unique among all medical forms. And to make sure we don't forget that, it's colored absolutely shocking bright pink in the state
really?
Of California.
Yep. Now, why is that? Why is that? Just to get people's attention?
To get people's attention because of the critical nature of the form, mm-hmm. the importance of the information it conveys, and the fact that it's a patient's own document. This is a form that actually you fill out with your physician or provider, and you keep the form. And
does
the medical
it, do you
record,
give a copy to your, yes, your doctor?
Yes, the you medical do. Record contains a copy of the form, but the form is actually yours to keep because it's intended to really assist and protect your wishes.
Is the POLST form something that doctors' offices generally have?
We hope that most offices in the state of California now do have or have access to the POLST form. Our program has been going on in this state for a number of years now, very robustly since 2009, mm-hmm. when the POLST form was first rolled out. And we've been through several revisions of the form to fine-tune it in a way that better represents patients' needs and desires and to better assist physicians as they interpret the form. So, yes, we hope that most physicians and providers have heard of the form, either have it in their office or they have access to it.
Okay. Certainly someone with the website that I gave for your organization, coalitionccc.org, someone could download the form from your website, could it not?
They can download the form to look at it.
Yeah.
It's important to know that we believe that the discussion about the form and about the choices you're making on the form should be conducted with a knowledgeable facilitator or your physician or provider.
And someone who obviously is going to work with the patient who wants to have a POLST, this is someone who has, this medical person is someone who has had some special training in terms of trying to help the patient figure out what they want to do. Is that correct or not?
That's mostly correct, yes. Many providers are quite skilled at conducting advanced care planning and pulsed discussions. Other providers might have less extensive experience with filling out this form. And depending on your medical situation, it might be complex. You may need a lot of information to fill out the pulsed form, or you may be fairly comfortable knowing what's going on with your health and may need less help. But we strongly believe that that conversation, and we call it the conversation, should be facilitated at least on some level when you need to consider significant medical treatment options.
Jenna, are you there? Are we still having problems? You have the phone number for Jana? Okay, I don't know what happened here, unfortunately. Lael and I had been talking to Jana before we started the program, and I then put her on the the station system, and we, for some strange reason, have lost her. I hear something here, but it's... Jana, are you there? Apparently not. Well... Debbie, if you would, see if you can get her on the line so that we can have her on this program. What's the difference between, now, I think most people are familiar with something called an advanced health care directive or a durable power of attorney for health care. What's the difference between a pulsed and advanced health care directive?
That's a great question, and one that should be answered. The Advance Healthcare Directive is a legal document that indicates, in particular, who will be making decisions for you when you're unable to make them for yourself, either due to accident or injury or serious illness or something else happens. So it's a document that is filled out, we hope, well in advance of any medical event or emergency. It should.
And at a point when you're still in fairly decent health,
usually,
you would hope. Yeah.
Usually, the people who are filling out advance directives are in good health, but often it doesn't get done until a little bit later. We hope that it's done when you are well enough to have the energy to consider this important decision. So the advance medical directive does two things. One, most importantly, it legally identifies your durable power of attorney for healthcare. That is the person who's legally empowered to speak for you when you can't speak for yourself or can't make decisions for yourself. And second, you have the option to include some information about the type of care that you might want in the future should you become seriously ill. And usually that information is fairly general, and it should include statements, for instance, about what you value in life and what types of care you might want should you become ill. The pulsed document, on the other hand, is a document that is specifically intended for people who are either very medically frail at any age or quite elderly and frail, or are facing a very serious, potentially life-threatening illness. We often use a question in order to determine if a pulsed is appropriate for someone or not. And if you ask yourself, gosh, would I be surprised if something really serious happened to this person, or they were, or could they face a life-threatening illness or event within the next 6 months to a year or slightly more than that. If you answer yes to that question, that person should have a pulsed.
I see. I see. You know, one of the things that I think is important to know about this is that although, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not an estate planning attorney, I'm not a medical doctor, but a pulsed, if you fill it out, can allow the natural death to accrue, but it doesn't allow active euthanasia, or a physician-assisted suicide. Is that correct?
The POLST form doesn't indicate anything about the choices for the End of Life Options Act, which you've alluded to. So as many of your listeners may know, California recently passed legislation, ABX 215, that will allow for what has been called death with dignity, such as the laws that they have in Oregon, where a patient can opt to choose to prematurely or maturely terminate their suffering and illness. Now, it's a very detailed procedure, and it's brand new legislation in our state. The POLST form does not in any way address a patient's wish for this particular option. The POLST form addresses a different set of medical options that are intended to highlight areas that will need to be considered when a patient has a life-threatening illness or emergency and they cannot speak for themselves. And in that instance, the POLST form can be taken as their word on what they would want done. For the End of Life Options Act, if you are considering that option or wish to understand it better, you need to know first and foremost that you have to have absolute full mental capacity and capability. You have to be in your right mind. You have to be empowered to understand and carry out that care choice independently. Whereas the POLST is a piece of paper that will indicate to your physicians what you want when you can't speak for yourself. So you can see the situation is really quite different.
Well, I can certainly do, No question about it. The patient or the person who wants a POLST, who is faced with, who may be frail, who may be faced with a very serious illness and possibly, to be very honest about it, may have 6 to 12 months to live, approximately. Is it part of the procedure of that, besides the patient or the person who wants a POLST, besides sitting down with his or her doctor who can help make these decisions, is it also important for that person to seek the advice of his or her attorney or some attorney who knows something about estate planning? Or is the POLST something that's just between the patient and the patient's doctor or medical advisor?
Again, that's a very good question. The POLST document is a medical form. It is a legal form when it is signed by the patient who fills it out and their provider.
Should they see their attorney, though, before they? No, they shouldn't. Okay. All right.
They don't need to. And
okay.
Because the nature of the form is distinctly medical and involves complex care options.
Yeah.
It's not a form that an attorney, I would think, would be comfortable filling out.
You talked a few minutes ago, and have we found Jana yet? We haven't found Jana. Poor Jana. For those of you that, sometimes, I've got to tell you, sometimes we have the gremlins running, and I don't know why. Recently, some of you may know that KLW, which is the oldest non-commercial public radio station this side of the Rockies. It's 70-some-odd years old. It is owned by the San Francisco School District. It has been for many years in the Burton High School. John and Sally Burton, who were members of Congress, this high school was originally Woodrow Wilson High. It was changed in honor of John and Sally Burton to have their name on it. Well, there's major construction being done on this building. So a few weeks ago, the station moved into the portable structures, and that's where Lael and I are. They're actually very nice. But we've got gremlins running, and we've got a problem with a long-distance guest who actually I was talking with before we went on the air. I was talking with her on my cell phone along with Lael, planning this program for you. And then I hung up on my cell phone and called on the station phone so that we would have her on the air. And I talked with her briefly, put her on hold, and something's happened. So I don't know what it is, whether one of these Star Wars horrible people have come, the bad guys on Star Wars, and done something. But in a few minutes, I'm going to invite you to call in and ask some questions of my guest, who's actually with me in the studio, thank God, who is someone who's very knowledgeable about Pulse and is a medical doctor, Dr. Lael Conway Duncan. She's the medical director of consulting services of the Coalition for Compassionate Care of California. The office is in Sacramento. The website is coalitionccc.org. For those of you who are familiar with the program, I think you know that we generally try to, on the fourth Wednesday of the month, have what's called Call a Lawyer Night. We're going to do that next week. That's January 27th. Where you'll have an opportunity to call in to one or more attorneys who are in the conference room here off the air. You might want to jot down that number if you listen to the program live. It's 800-525-9917. That's for Call a Lawyer. For tonight, if you're listening to this program live on January 20th, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. In a few minutes, we'll start taking your calls on the air if you'd like to call in either about a Pulse or an advanced health care directive or maybe some other issue that you feel you'd like to pose to Dr. Duncan here. In any event, while my engine – yeah.
Well, I was
– we're all right now. You there, Jana? Jenna, I hear Debbie running.
Hear me?
Jenna, are you there?
Yes, I am.
I don't know what happened. We had a gremlin running, and it's so nice to have you here.
Thank you. We have
gotten to the point where I was just about to ask the question, what is the difference, and Jenna, if you'd respond to this, what's the difference between an advanced health directive and something called the durable power of attorney for healthcare? Is there a difference?
Well, the Advanced Healthcare Directive actually has two parts of it. There is the first portion of it, which is, in effect, a durable power of attorney for healthcare.
I see.
That's the portion where you name someone to make medical decisions for you. The second portion is the directive portion, and that's where you describe the types of decisions that you want to have made by your appointed decision maker. It's very possible that, I mean, sometimes people will fill out only the power of attorney portion where they name a surrogate decision maker without filling out their decisions or their desires mm-hmm. in terms of the types of decisions. But in California, it is one document, and we generally refer to it as the Advanced Healthcare Directive.
What recommendation, then, do you have with regard to an Advanced Health Directive of someone who, as I understand it, in terms of Dr. Duncan saying that this is something, generally speaking, and I think most people know this, that this is something that is put into effect, that is worked out and signed and whatever needs to make it legal while someone is generally in pretty good health, as opposed to being frail or having a serious illness where you might not be living 6 to 12 months, etc. What recommendation from the attorney's standpoint, Jana, do you have for someone in an advanced health direct care directive to make some statement about the kind of decisions that he or she would like the decision maker, whoever you've nominated, whether it's your child or a relative or a professional fiduciary or something like that? Do you have a recommendation that people should, in the Advanced Health Care Directive, indicate what kinds of decisions you would like your decision maker to make for you when you're incompetent to do so?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the point of an advanced healthcare directive is to communicate your wishes to the people who may be in the position of making decisions for you when you're not able to tell them what it is that you want. So we recommend that our clients complete the portion of the advance directive that express what their feelings are about life support or life-sustaining treatment and other types of care. And then we also recommend that they talk to the people they've named in the advance directive to give them the opportunity to ask questions. We hope that it is an opportunity to start a discussion about what the person's thoughts or wishes are when everybody is healthy and it's not under the gun, where yeah. everyone can talk about it and ask questions. And that way it makes it a lot easier if the decision maker is ever faced with making a decision to know what it is that the individual wanted.
What if, for example, if someone fills out a pulse? Pardon me, Dr. Duncan, did you want to say something? Go ahead, please.
I really agree with Jana, and it's incredibly important for patients who have specific wishes about their care, in particular if they have filled out an advance directive or especially a pulse form, that they share that information and discuss it in detail, probably more than once, with their decision maker, because it takes some time for someone to understand the nuances, perhaps, of the decision-making process. And to involve your family in critical decisions, or if not involve them, then make them aware of what your decisions mm-hmm. are. So nobody is caught blindsided by an event that happens and an unexpected outcome, or they didn't anticipate that you either would or would not want a certain type of care or life support. That really will reduce everyone's stress. And I also want to add one other point about the advance directives. It's given the health statistics in our country in particular, but really anywhere, we recommend that anyone over the age of 18 at least have a named decision maker because of the frequency of head injury and trauma yeah. that can occur early in life as a means of incapacitating someone. And this tends to be most prevalent demographically in the teens and 20s, and obviously a teen age person would be under the care of their parents or a guardian, but a young adult who's at risk for accident or trauma would need to name a decision maker. So we would like for this to be part of normal routine health care and management from the time that people are aged 18, that they begin advanced care planning, at least by making a directive and having a decision maker.
Wouldn't it make a lot of sense, and Jana and Lael, if you will respond to, both of you respond to this, if someone is going to put together an advanced health care directive, which would include who you are nominating to be your director, the person who's going to do the decision-making for you, wouldn't it make a lot of sense as you are in the process of putting this together? And usually, I think an advanced health directive is something that is done in conjunction with an attorney. Wouldn't it make a lot of sense to have that person who you want to be your decision maker a part of this discussion with the attorney? Can you respond to that or not?
Absolutely. But, yeah. I mean, I can respond to it. I don't necessarily agree because the completion of that document is usually as a part of your overall estate plan.
Yes.
If you're doing a will
of
or
course.
A trust, that should be a part of that plan. And because you're talking about other decisions, like who's going to handle your finances and who gets what when you pass, the attorney's not going to want to have your decision maker in the room with you,
mm-hmm.
Because those are very private conversations. And it's very important that the attorney hear what the individual wants and not what somebody else in the room wants them to say. You know, that being said, we always encourage them to take the form and talk with their family. And, you know, if they want to bring their family members in separately and talk just about the advance directive, we're more than happy to do that.
This is what I had in mind, that to me would make real good practical sense, to just focus on the advance health directive in the conference with the attorney and the person who wants the advance health directive and whoever the nominee may be for making these decisions. Lael, did you have something you wanted to add to that?
Certainly. One of the guides that we provide for people, and I'm sure Jana's offices and other estate planning offices may do this as well, there's a list of attributes that make for a particularly good or robust choice in terms of your decision maker. It's very easy to look at that list and make an informed choice about your decision maker, and that can be done either in the attorney's office if you happen to be doing estate planning at that time, if you haven't or you're not doing estate planning at that time but you need to fill out an advance directive, of course that can be done even in your own home and filled out properly and then either notarized or witnessed in the state of California.
We've come to the end of
that was,
yeah, Jana, pardon me, let me interrupt. We've come to the end of the statewide version of the program, which we distribute this half hour to 15 other stations in California. We will continue, however, live for another half hour. Everybody, I want to let you know, this is your opportunity in case you'd like to call in, ask a question, make a comment. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255, if you would like to talk with my guests. And they are Dr. Lael Conway Duncan, Medical Director of Consulting Services of the Coalition for Compassionate Care of California. The office is in Sacramento. The website is Coalition, C-O-A-L-I-T-I-O-N, CCC.org. My other guest is estate planning attorney Jana Ellerman, a member of the Executive Committee of the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar. She's a partner in the Cameron Park, California law firm of Guthrie and Ellerman. Before we take our first call, and I'm hoping that people will be enthusiastic about calling in at 866-798-8255. Support for KLW is provided also by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services of the San Francisco Bar, call 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. That number is 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Hopefully you will get a human being on the other end of the line. That's what I like. If so, and I think that's what you'll find, tell the person what your problem is, what legal problem you're facing. They'll do their best to try to find someone who's experienced in the area and set you up for a half an hour consultation with an attorney. And for a half an hour, with minor exception, you will pay either somewhere between $25 to $35 for that half hour. That money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep it going. It's a great consumer service. I hope you don't need it, but it's there for you. Now, Jana, I cut you off. What is it that you were about to say as I rudely cut you off?
Well, what I was going to emphasize or pick up on was something that Lael had just said, which is that you don't have to be at an attorney's office to complete the advance directive.
Mm-hmm.
They're set up in such a way that they can be done in your own home You don't even have to have them notarized. They can be witnessed by two individuals. Now, the two individuals who witness it cannot be the same people you're naming as decision makers. And the form, you have to follow the form carefully because one of those witnesses has to sign twice. But it's something that if anyone is, you know, doesn't want to have to pay the money to go to an attorney to complete them, an advanced health care directive is certainly available without an attorney.
Where do you find it?
Well, there are a number of websites where they're available. Most hospitals also have them.
I would presume there is an organization called the California Medical Association, isn't there not?
There is, and they have a form.
Yeah, I would think they would. So if you Google California Medical Association, you would have it. And Lael?
So I just also want to point out that we have several different types of advance directives on our website, appropriate for Californians. They can take a look at two or more different versions of the form and probably find one that they might be comfortable with. And they're right there, easy to download and review and print if you need them.
Well, that's good. Coming back to Pulse for a minute, is Pulse a Pulse, P-O-L-S-T, which we know now, I think all of us know this now, Physician's Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment, is this a form that is available throughout the United States? Or is it? Or is this just a California form?
There is a strong national Pulse organization. The Pulse form and its sister forms are state by state.
I see.
So many individual states have Pulsed or Pulsed-like programs in development. Some are very mature and robust, such as Oregon. New York has a very strong program. Their form is called the MOLST, Medical Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment. Hawaii has a form. Many states do have forms. So if you're listening in from another state or you want to find out more about the National Pulsed program, you can go to simply POLST.org, and that will give you the most up-to-date information and contact information for any existing Pulse organization in your state.
What from the attorney's standpoint, the estate planning attorney's standpoint, Jana, what do you find, for example, if an advanced health care directive says something, gives some indication or some direction to the person who's been nominated as the person who's going to make the decisions. If it has if the person who has signed to or who has the advanced health care directive, that it deals with that person's life and what kind of things that person wants to have the person making the decisions do, what if that advanced health care directive has a disagreement, or there is a disagreement between that and a Pulse? What do you do then? What comments from an attorney standpoint do you have at this point, Jana? Because, as I understand it, a Pulse will be something that is prepared much after an advanced health care directive. If there are problems with them, if there are disagreements between the two, what do you do?
Well, if there's a disagreement, whichever one was completed last is the one that's going to be effective. So if you did an advanced directive and 10 years down the road you do a Pulse, then the Pulse will be the most recent. And so it will, if there's a disagreement, the Pulse will prevail.
I see. Okay.
And that's in part because again, advanced directive is you're planning in advance, and you don't have a medical emergency in front of you. A Pulse is much closer in time when the medical situation has occurred, or the individual is frail, otherwise. They may have a terminal illness or something of that effect. At that point, the decisions as to life-sustaining treatment might be different than they were 10 or 15 years before when the advance directive was completed. And so it makes sense for the one that's later in time to be the one that prevails.
If there is a conflict, as we've just been discussing, a conflict as to certain directions that are issued in the Pulse and certain directions of conflict in the Advanced Health Care Directive, is the Advanced Health Care Directive still viable and a legal document with respect to who has been nominated as the person to make the decisions? Is that part of it still good?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. What if I am caring for a family member and I realize that this person is very frail, maybe facing perhaps not more than a year of life left? What do I do as a family member to try to do something to help my relative? What would you say, Lael? What would you recommend at that point that I should do?
Well, if your relative has not had any form of advanced care planning, then that is what needs to be done at that point. Hopefully, there's an existing advanced directive.
Let's assume there is. Let's assume there is one.
And are we assuming then that you are the named decision maker?
Let's say I am.
Okay.
Let's say I am. But I've heard this program, and I realize now maybe there's
something
else. We should do something else, such as a Pulse. How do I go about doing that?
So the easiest way is actually to accompany your relative to a physician's office,
and
which is a good idea anyway, because if you're going to be responsible for making medical decisions for that person, it would behoove you to have some relationship with at least one of their physicians or providers, and to encourage your relative to complete a Pulse form and to indicate to the physician or provider that you would like to discuss this option and that you feel it's important, and tell them why.
Comments from you, Jana, on that?
Yeah, there's one important thing, and I'm not sure whether you covered this earlier or not. But
you mean when we were trying to find you?
Yes, when I was lost in
You were in the ether somewhere. I don't know what happened there, and I'm awfully sorry that you were... You were somewhere out there, but I'm awfully glad you're back. But go ahead.
That's okay. One of the things that comes up is an advance directive can only be completed by the individual whose health care is, whose directive it is.
Yeah.
By the principal.
Right.
And one of the things that happens if no planning has been done and you have a very frail relative, one of the questions that comes up is, does that person have capacity to complete an advance directive?
Yeah.
One of the things about a Pulse is that it can be completed by a surrogate decision maker even after the principal lacks capacity.
How do you determine who is the surrogate decision maker? How is that done?
If there's an advance directive...
Okay, all right. So you're saying if someone in the advance health care directive has been nominated as the person to make decisions, that person then, if the individual is incompetent, can go ahead and put together a Pulse.
It's actually not limited just to that.
Okay.
If there's a person nominated in an advance directive, then... Yes, that person can complete the Pulse. A spouse can complete a Pulse. Sometimes a next of kin can complete the Pulse. Lael?
I'd be happy to comment, Janet.
The rest of the list?
Yeah, well, you're exactly right. And it's best and safest when we know that the individual themselves has named their surrogate decision maker. Then it's clear to those in the healthcare system that are treating this individual who should be making decisions. We often face the situation where there is no advance directive. And then generally speaking, in the state of California, it says the closest next of kin. Mm-hmm. But that determination is often hospital by hospital as to what their exact definition is. So usually you hope, I shouldn't say usually, one hopes that the situation is clear. So if there's an engaged spouse who's available, your husband or your wife of long standing who clearly might know what your wishes are, then that would be the logical choice. But certainly I have seen many families where a first spouse has died. There's a second spouse that maybe does or doesn't get along with the adult children. Mm-hmm. The adult children may not necessarily agree with each other about medical interventions. Spirituality and culture come very much into play in these types of decisions. And so it can be very, very stressful on a family even to try to sort out who should be making decisions and how they should be made. This is another reason why it's really, if you have a feeling about who should be making decisions for you, or you have any strong feeling about the type of care that you want, then you should indicate in an advanced healthcare directive who should be making those decisions, mm-hmm. and how the decision should be made. And you may have a family culture that is highly centered around collective decision making, mm-hmm. where, you know, everyone sits down together in a room, in which case the person in your advanced directive will be serving as the spokesperson to the medical field, but they would be taking input from siblings, other relatives, and so on, as is appropriate for your cultural and spiritual situation. But it's really, really helpful to the medical system to know who they should be talking to and who they should be listening to.
Jenna, let me ask.
There's another point to that, and that is that if this is an area where you know there's conflict in your family, you know there are differing opinions, that makes it even more important that you've taken the step for the advanced planning and done the advanced directive where you've named who it is that you want to have be the decision maker, and you've given some direction ahead of time.
Absolutely.
What could happen is if the family is fighting and no one has been named as the decision maker in an advance directive, the hospital may not allow anyone to complete a pulse.
Let me throw something out to both of you, if I may. But before I do that, you out there, everybody, you're very quiet tonight. What's going on? Is there something really special going on TV tonight? Do we know? I don't think so. So if you'd like to call in with your question, your comment, your concern, our toll-free number, there's no expense on your part. This is toll-free, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. By the way, everyone, I just want to let you know, for those of you who listen to the program live, we will do our Call a Lawyer night next week, January 27th, and you can call in and speak with one of several attorneys off the air while I'm doing the live program. We're going to be talking, by the way, next week about public employees and their due process rights at the workplace, and it's a little bit different than if you're working for a private employer. That'll be on the air, and you can call in on that for public employees, due process, employment rights. And, however, for Call a Lawyer, it's 1-800-525-9917 on January 27th. But let me put this to both of you, however. How often, a couple of questions, if you don't mind. If someone who's thinking about putting together an advanced healthcare directive, if that person has two or three children, and has a good relationship with each, and somehow is thinking, gee, I have a difficulty here of appointing one as my decision maker over the other one or over the third one, what recommendations do both of you have for someone like this? Because there may be a real difficulty that a parent may have in appointing only one of the kids versus the other two. Lael, what comments do you have? And then, Jen, I'll come back to you.
So that is often a struggle for families who don't want literally to hurt someone's feelings or to make it seem like they're choosing one person for a particular reason. In that case, we recommend that they consider proximity and availability. So somebody who's going to be more available or might be more comfortable in a medical setting, these are some of the other attributes that make a good agent a choice of a healthcare decision maker. Are they knowledgeable about the process and the role that they're fulfilling? Are they available either by cell phone all the time, or are they in the area? Can they meet you at the hospital if something happens? Mm-hmm. These are some of the considerations. So we recommend that they try to make a determination, that they discuss with their family why and how they're doing that. They should name a second or alternate agent because somebody might be on an airplane or they might be on vacation. Their cell phone might be out of battery. So you should always have two people listed. And then
the second person is?
Could be another sibling.
Another child. But only to become involved if the first one is not available.
Only to be the main spokesperson if the first person is not available.
Okay.
Normally the siblings are going to discuss the care situation in any case. I often also encourage families to give other individuals in the family similarly important roles. Mm-hmm. So if one person is going to be the medical decision maker and is going to be the spokesperson to the healthcare team, maybe somebody else is managing communications to relatives or is handling logistical planning around the household and meals for somebody else who's at home. Or maybe the other person actually has durable power of attorney for financial matters.
Yeah.
So there are lots of other roles that other family members can take on.
I nominated Johnny and not Mary, et cetera.
Exactly.
Jenna, what comments do you have about this?
Much along the same line. We really, really discourage people from naming co-agents.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible that they could name two people to act together, but to me that is just an invitation for difficulties when it comes time to make the decisions.
We're hearing Martin on the line here. Somehow I was hearing my associate producer on the in my headset, and so, well, let's do this. We have a number of people who would like to talk with you. Let's start with Tim. Tim, thank you very much for calling. I'm glad we woke you up from whatever you were doing. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Of course.
It's a simple question. I have a domestic partner, and he and I plan on traveling outside of the state of California, and we want to know if the pink form that you mentioned earlier would be honored in all 50 states in the case of some sort of end-of-life decision.
That's a good point. Very good point, Tim. Jenna, what do you say?
Well, I believe the answer is yes. In general, it's going to be recognized, the full faith and credit of the law. If it was valid when it was made here, it's going to be recognized in other states. And the issue is going to be, the exception is if there's something in the pulse that would be legal in California and not legal in that state. Lael may have more experience in dealing with other states.
Yeah, so I agree with Jana. For an advanced healthcare directive, generally speaking, there's reciprocity between most of the states, so that a document that's filled out under the legal requirements of the state of California, either notarized or appropriately witnessed, naming a healthcare durable power of attorney for healthcare, that would be valued and taken as a representation of the a legal document in another state.
Mm-hmm.
The POLST form would be respected as a strong indication expansion of the patient's wishes regarding health care, and in states that have more robust POLST programs and they're more familiar with it, they may be more inclined to honor that form outright, but they're not legally bound to do that the mm-hmm. way that physicians and providers are in the state of California. Mm-hmm. So they would probably want to just verify the contents of the form with whoever is named as the durable power of attorney for health care.
Okay. All right. We have Marilyn. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi.
Hi there.
I wanted to know if this is the end-of-life visit that we aren't getting, because I don't see it in my Kaiser Benefits booklet, that Zeke Emanuel recommended and that turned out to be so controversial, and to fill out this particular form. Am I making sense to anybody?
Not to me, but I'm not familiar with that. Lael, go ahead, ask her.
Let me rephrase your question and see if I have it right, Marilyn. You're wondering if the discussion around having this form or creating a form for you or for someone else is part of a particular type of healthcare visit with your providers. Is that correct?
Yes, the controversial visit that I guess hasn't, it isn't under Medicare yet.
Okay. Well, fortunately for us, it is under Medicare now, and just as of this year, physicians and providers are going to be able to bill Medicare for their time in conducting advanced care planning conversations. This is new. And
as of this year?
As of this year.
2016.
See,
that's interesting.
So this is very, very important legislation for us, because we believe that physicians now will feel more comfortable making extra time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes these conversations are complex and time-consuming. They require some degree of expertise. And we would like to reimburse professionals for having these conversations. So that's new. And I would think even at Kaiser, which is an excellent healthcare system, and they definitely have a life care and advanced care planning program in their system in several areas in California. So they should be pretty up to speed on this. And I would think that you could simply ask your provider or indicate that you want to discuss these matters with them and consider which form is right for you.
Can I please have a follow-up?
Sure, go ahead.
Well, they do offer, and they have for some time, offer classes to help you fill out your advanced care directive. But for this more serious form, the POLST, it sounds more serious and specific for you.
Correct.
That would be a special doctor's visit.
Yes, yes. You do need to discuss this form usually with a doctor, a nurse, a physician's assistant, somebody who is a medical provider and knows you pretty well, in order to fill it out. And the reason we say that is because we want the form to represent your wishes, and we want to be able to honor that. We want to make sure it's correct, and it's, since it is a medical order set, it's important that a medical provider assist you with the form, and the form is not legal unless it is signed by a provider.
Well, what does Medicare call this visit? Because I don't find it in my evidence of coverage.
I don't think there is a name for the visit. The billing codes come under advanced care planning, and they can be tacked on to a regular wellness visit or a checkup for other medical problems.
And what you might want to do, also, Marilyn, on this, you've been looking at your plan for Kaiser, right?
Yes, but she just answered my question that it's a billing code.
Yeah, okay. Well, you might also, to get more information, you might want to call the business office of Kaiser and get some more information from them, since this is such a new thing that's going on here, to make yourself feel really good about it. So thank you very much for calling and bringing up that question.
You're welcome.
Okay, take care now. One more. We have one more person to talk with. Sue, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes, hello. Do either of the guests know of any resources for people who do not have anyone to be their agent on an advanced care directive, to find resources for agents that would not cost money or cost them very much money? And this is for the East Bay of the Bay Area.
Jana, do you want to start with that one?
Jana, are you there? Did we lost Jana? Okay. The gremlins have returned.
Okay.
Lil with comments.
Sue, thanks for asking this question, and it is a tough one. I think that many, many people are in this situation where they just don't have someone in their immediate circle that they feel comfortable having as an agent for lots of different reasons. There isn't one overall resource for this type of person. I think you alluded to a paid fiduciary who would be able to stand in that position as your legal representative on an advanced health care directive, as your durable power of attorney for healthcare, but that is usually requires some outlay of fees. We encourage people to go to their county medical society and also county social services to see if there are any volunteers or other knowledgeable persons who are available to do this work. But it's a problem that needs to be solved in our state. You have, you know, my word that we talk about this regularly, and we really hope to have an answer in the pipeline sometime. I don't know when that will be, but it's important because we want everyone to have a really strong voice about their own care and to have their wishes honored when it needs to be done.
Let me give you the website again for the coalition that we've been talking about, and that is coalitionccc.org. That might be very helpful for you to look at and get more information. Lael, I want to thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And
it's
Jana,
been my pleasure.
Jana, wherever you are, you're back.
She's
okay,
back.
We've come to the end of the we've come to the end of the program. I'm glad you got back off of your flying saucer. This is really good, Jana. Okay, thanks so much. My guests have been estate planning attorney Jana Ellerman. She flies a saucer, by the way, and a member of the Executive Committee of the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar. She's a partner in the Cameron Park, California law firm of Guthrie and Ellerman. Thanks, Jana, so much. My other guest has been Dr. Lael Conway Duncan, Medical Director of Consulting Services of the Coalition for Compassionate Care of California in Sacramento. That website, again, is coalition, coalitionccc.org. And I want to let you know what we're doing next week. We're going to be talking in the employment law area, but we're focusing on due process employment rights of public employees. I think you'll find this very interesting. My guests will be employment law attorneys Ellen Mendelson, who represents public employees in disputes and cases, and also Alfonso Estrada, who represents public entity employers. It's also, for those of you listening to the program live, it is our Call a Lawyer night. This will be on January 27th, 1-800-525-9917. This segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar. I want to let you know who's with me for the program. The announcer operator has been Debbie Kennedy. Thank you, Debbie, for being with me. Production assistant Martin McLean. Additional funding for the program is made possible by the Trust and, well, I just told you that, by the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and the National Board of Trial Advocacy. Join us next week. Thanks so much. I'm Chuck Finney.